Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, it would be just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio stream, Media Wave 1540 in the Satellite Islam, and just beautiful weather for the last couple of days, sometimes, you know, bordering on the other extreme, being extremely hot, and many of us scanning the skies and waiting for the first signs of rain. And we do know that the country currently, experts are saying that we're in for a very dry period of weather, rain not forecast, you know, having to do the La Nino effect and so forth. So there's lots of explanations around that. But really, we go out and we'll scan the skies and we pray and we hope that we do get rain. And we are truly, truly grateful, and we are blessed when we see what we have and people do not have. And we raise our hands and we say, yes, we are definitely amongst those that are most fortunate. This morning we have a wonderful guest, and she's been a regular speaker with us and been sending so much information, and that's Michelle Kudzer. Hi, good morning, Michelle.
Morning, Ismail.
How are you? And as I said, we're all scanning the skies for rain, and people said, and as I walked in, somebody said to me, well, we had a little bit of rain on the other side of Johannesburg. Well, I said, that's not good enough because it's not getting in the catchment area. So whilst we do, you know, want every drop of rain, you know, every drop does count. And where you are, you know, that's the most important part for many of us in Gauteng, because you're nearer towards the Vaal Dam, Vaal River, you know, confluence and so forth. So that's what we're talking about, rains in that area. Has there been any signs of that happening, Michelle?
Well, there's been signs of cloud. Actually, early this morning there were some lovely clouds, but unfortunately they seem to have dissipated and run away, you know. But there is, I still have hope, because there is moisture in the air. Because if there are clouds, it means there is moisture. So I'm hopeful that we will get it.
Yeah, so whilst we're talking about, you know, everyone scanning the skies, hoping for some moisture, so hoping for something that we can get. And there's also been a call, and some say, well, not really out as an official call, but it's been a call for people to, be mindful of the way they use water, way utilization of water. And I've seen some of the, with social media these days, everything comes out before it is even officially announced and said, well, make sure that you no longer use a hose pipe, but use a bucket to wash your car. When you are watering, use a watering can and so forth. Now, this morning I want us just to unpack a little bit of that for our gardeners. We have gardens, and how should we go about becoming water-wise?
Those that are still planting should consider planting according to different water zones. So in other words, the plants that need a lot more water, try and plant them together so that it's easier to water those, and those that require less water, put them in an area together. And just to clarify that, generally speaking, most plants with grey leaves need a lot less water. For example, things like olive trees, irises, lavenders, even rosemary that's got a grey-green leaf, all those require a lot less water, so one can group them together. And as I say, it just makes it so much easier when you're watering your garden.
So once you're looking at plants, if we wanted to buy, and if we are going out this morning to do some shopping for plants, it would be wiser to look for those that have a sort of a more greyish foliage. Is that what we're saying?
That's correct, yes, because they will definitely require a lot less water. And also what's important is to plant the plants in the correct position according to their sun or shade needs. For example, if you go and put something like an azalea, which likes shade, in the full blazing sun, obviously, first of all, it's not going to grow as well, and secondly, it's going to require so much more water. So whilst people love things like impatiens, they definitely do better in the shade, because obviously they won't be losing as much water in the shade, so they won't need as much watering. But those that go and plant them in full sun, they will then be wasting water because they'll be needing to water them so much more often.
So whilst we do now have perhaps zones for them, we try those that more, you know, that need the sun or that needs the shade, and also plants that need more water and less water. So once we have all of that in our gardens, it makes it so much easier for us to look after them and to pamper them to their needs.
That's right, yes. And one thing that I must mention, I've mentioned it before and I can't stress it enough, is the benefit of mulching. And for those gardeners that don't know what mulching is, it's a thick layer that you put on top of the soil, whether it's bark chips, whether it's macadamia nutshells, whether it's peach pits, whether it's straw, whether it's shredded newspaper. You put this layer of at least about 5 centimeters on your soil, which helps to keep the soil temperature more even, and the plants don't lose so much water. There's much less evaporation, and also you don't get as many weeds, and then your weeds are competing with your plants for the little bit of water that there is.
So we have all of that now. And then I was at a garden center yesterday, just looking around at some of the things, and we find that there's a lot of succulents that are, you know, available. So those of you that have smaller spaces and don't have lots of time perhaps to be spending out in your garden, a succulent would be a good alternative. Is that correct?
Yes, definitely, because they can survive with very little water. And then, of course, they will thrive if they get more, but the big thing is that they will survive. And I think at this stage, with the heat, one has to look at things that will survive, you know. So one really needs to minimize the color and put the color sort of closer to the house where you can get to it easily with your bucket or your watering can to water it, instead of putting your color far away from the house.
We've settled that now. We have this. And the other thing, is there any other tips that we'd like to share? I know there's about how to use and not to use a watering can, when to water, when and what times to water. Give us some of those.
Basically, I usually recommend that one waters early in the morning, sort of before 11 o'clock, because any watering from 11 till 2 is just pointless, because whatever water you're putting down is evaporating because it's so hot. One can water in the late afternoon. The only problem is that there's certain plants, for example, the snapdragons, that don't like to go to bed with wet feet, as they call it. So that's something that one needs to be aware of. That's why I recommend rather in the morning, because some plants don't enjoy being wet at night, because then you get fungal diseases.
And, with conditions like this, is it prone to a lot of plants getting fungal diseases? Will we see more of that happening with the extremities of heat?
Yes, we will definitely, especially if we do get sort of clouds building up and then disappearing and clouds building up again. That is sort of the right conditions for fungal diseases to start happening. So they need to keep an eye open for that. And for funguses, one needs to remember that you need to spray preventatively, so that you sort of spray before the problem occurs. Don't wait until it's happening. So it will be a good idea to use a fungicide. Something like vine and dusting sulfur is a very good fungicide because it's easy to apply. You just put it in an old stocking or in a little tea sieve and you sieve it over the plants that are prone to fungal diseases.
And what was it called again?
Vine and dusting sulfur.
Vine and
dusting sulfur, yes. Particularly things like your hydrangeas, because it's time for them to bloom now. And if you just take it as a yellow powder, which you then sprinkle on, and as I said, that will definitely help with the mildew. You can even use it on your roses. We've used it on roses quite successfully for mildew and black spot.
And you just mix a certain quantity and then spray or water over that particular infected plant or the plant that you think would be infected.
No, in this case with vine and dusting sulfur, you actually apply it with a sieve. So you're just sieving it all over your plants.
Okay, so it's
so
not
there's
just
no mixing needed.
So it's a dry substance you just throw over.
That's correct, yes.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much for that one, Michelle. And we finish off with that particular subject, would you recommend some of the water-wise plants that we can, and those that I know we've gone through the subject of endemic and indigenous and so forth, what would you recommend for people who are still busy trying to get some color into the garden, wanting to bring some of that? What would be water-wise and give us that wow factors?
In colour, your gazanias, which happen to be indigenous, are probably one of the most showy of the dry water plants, if I can put it that way. They can really survive with very little. Even your adipanthus, which are coming into bloom now, they also don't need a lot of water. And your octotus, things like petunias, although they need regular water, they don't need a lot at a time. And I think this is often the mistake people make with petunias, is that they see that they're starting to look as though they're wilting and then they overwater them. So petunias need a little bit at a time. But having said that, I also want to say that we need to be careful not to encourage shallow roots by watering shrubs and trees less frequently, but a little bit at a time. Rather do it sort of once a week properly than a little bit every day, because if you just give a little bit, you're encouraging shallow roots, because the water is right at the top of the soil. So if you water deeply once a week, that really makes a difference. But to come back to the plants, diaceas are also very nice for color. Geraniums are tough and they don't need a lot of water, and they also give you good color.
So we have a number of choices when it comes to color. We can look at the indigenous and things that are not indigenous, perhaps endemic to certain areas. And that would be a great way of using less water and would help with conservation. And there are a number of things that we can do. And, you know, Michelle has taken us through some of these. And water-wise is important. Remember, not only when we don't have water, but even when we do have water, to use water. It's a very, very precious commodity. And something that people have been predicting and say, well, fine, great wars are going to be fought about this, and we need to be wary of this. I beg your pardon, we need to take that into account and see how we can help with the conservation. Michelle, now the other aspect is that many of us are a bit scared. I'm not, or sometimes we have the spaces and we do not know how to utilize it. And I'm talking about garden being a sacred space, a space where you can come and be and be. Contemplative garden, where you can be with yourself, or where you can do so many things. And, do we take that opportunity of going out in our garden, being with ourselves? Now, when you're gardening, many times it's a chore that you do by yourself, especially if you're just cleaning up. Maybe when you do have a person helping you, planting, and that's the one aspect. But the other time is now you're going around there, making sure the weeds are taken out, you're planting. And that type of space becomes what I call a sacred space, because you're there with your thoughts all by yourself and you can do that. Tell us something about that.
No, that's certainly the case. I think the big thing to remember, Ismail, is to actually decide, what is your garden there for? Is your garden there for entertaining? Is your garden there for yourself to go and reflect or meditate? What is the purpose of your garden? As I say, is it just there for aesthetic value, or do you spend time in your garden? How much time do you spend in your garden? How much time do you have to work in your garden? Because all of those things will determine what type of plant your plant. And for example, if you have children in the garden, you'll have to make sure that you've got a grass area for them to play. If you're sick, or if you're disabled, or if you're blind, perhaps then you need to consider planting things with scented flowers so that you encourage the other senses. So as I said, it all depends on what's the purpose of your garden and how much time do you have to spend in it and how much time do you have to spend working in it.
Now, when you have that, and many of us would be going, fine, we've set out a certain space to be, and to be called what our garden, and that's it. And we only have a very limited amount of time. We come in and we commute from wherever we are, and by the time we come back, it's evening. The only time we really seem to have the opportunity of going out into our garden is perhaps Sunday morning. But the rest of the time when you come back is about 5:30, 6:30, and we're wanting to still enjoy that period of time in the garden. What do you recommend should be planted, or what colors? And let's go through the colors first and then come back to that space again.
Well, colors, I would recommend sort of whites and blues and pinks. Stay away from the yellows and oranges because they're not calming, whereas your blues and your purples are definitely more calming, and your white, of course, is nice early in the morning or late in the evening. And try and stay away from too much sort of seedlings. Concentrate more on permanent things that need less attention, especially if you've got less time to spend in the garden. For example, the perennials, which will die down and come back every year, and your permanent shrubs, because they'll just need an occasional pruning. It's not like seedlings that they need to deadhead continuously.
Now, again, you've touched on something that's so important, this color. Many of us sometimes think, oh, fine, I'm just going to rush out and buy some color. I need to get this whole garden full of color, emblazoned full of color. And then you find that you're not getting that calming effect, as you said. You're not getting that effect that you wanted. And the colors you're mentioning are specific, the blues and the whites and the pinks. It's more tranquil than the yellow and the orange and the reds. Would that be right?
That's definitely the case. Yes, whilst the yellows and oranges and reds give you a sense of warmth because they sort of represent the sun, they certainly don't have a calming effect. So, and if that's what you're using your garden for, to reflect or meditate or just relax, you need to look at having more calming colors.
Let's go back to this garden being a sacred space and being, something that you can, getting out into the garden, just even if it's just for 10 minutes a day, doing something in there, even if it's just a case of pottering and trying to tidy up does have a lot of both health and other benefits. Take us through some of that.
No, most definitely. Well, they say gardening is the best gym. So those of you that are paying these huge gym fees, rather spend some time in the garden. No, but it definitely has a tranquil, calming effect. In the garden center, we have flower boxes against the wall in the parking area. And every morning my mom goes and she deadheads the seedlings. And she enjoys doing it because it has that sort of tranquil, calming effect on you, because you need to concentrate on that flower that you're picking off. And sort of that's all you're thinking about. And everything else you're not concerned about.
Now, you know, again, from your own experience and from people who come in to buy things from the garden, from the scent and so forth, what is the trend, you know, when it comes, people are saying, we're coming now and life's so rushed and we want to get, and you get that sense of feeling when they're buying things from you. Do they come into the garden, do you get that, do you pick that type of feeling from many of the people?
No, most certainly, because they want something instant and they want something that's green the whole time and something that doesn't need trimming often, and it sort of must look after itself. So sort of the old, tough, hardy shrubs seem to be making a comeback.
When you talk about the tough, hardy, take us through some of those. Oh, and whilst we do understand that it is because of our lifestyles and the hectic lifestyles that we have, and we're going to go on to a little bit about, after the break, about the food side of things. Just tell us something about, you know, some of those things, about the toughness of plants.
Yes, and there's so many new plants on the market these days, and I try and recommend the old tried and trusted things, the plants that have been around for a long time, that they've been selling in the garden centers for over 50 years, because at least you know those can handle the weather. They're really tough, they can handle the drought. And if I may just mention a few, rosemary is really tough. The abelias, the Indian hawthorn, which makes pink star-shaped flowers, the real name is Raphiolepis. That has a nice glossy green leaf and a very nice shrub that does well in sun or shade. And the buxus, these new box hedges that they're clipping. And the buxus actually doesn't need that much clipping because it grows in a fairly neat round ball by itself. The myrtle, which they often use the berries from, some people consider it a herb. They're also tough. The rock roses, which is a cistus. There's really so many old tough plants, even lavenders, the lemon verbena that they use in herbal teas. That's also an old tried and trusted shrub. So I think the big thing is to go for the old things. I'm by no means saying that the new things aren't good. All I'm saying is that the old ones we know can handle the drought and they will survive. And things like the mayflowers as well, the viburnums, they're also very tough.
Once you've given us a list of all of these, which I think are so important, and like you said, the old ones are trusty friends, and we know that we can depend on them, dependable, and we know they're going to come in year after year, and we don't have to worry about whether things go into fashion or out of fashion. I think those are important pointers. Now, I just want to go back about to talk about that sacred space again. It's an opportunity for us to touch the earth and, you know, to become one with, and that feeling of letting the sand run through your fingers and, you know, taking the water. And although it becomes muddy and perhaps your nails and everything needs to be a good brush after you've done all of that, but I think it's worth all of that, isn't it?
It certainly is, and it's very satisfying when you're sitting in your garden relaxing and you sort of look at your shrubs and you think, I planted those. I mean, I had a young guy in the nursery a couple of weeks ago, and he bought roses, and he insisted he wasn't going to get the gardener to plant it. He was going to do it himself, and it was so satisfying when he came back and he said, oh, I planted it all, and they're all growing, and to really just see the satisfaction in his face to know that he's done it himself, you know, and that in itself, I think, gives you some calming effect and sort of some pleasure for yourself.
Michelle, you've been in the garden center for so long, and you come from a family, and you've done all of that, and you've seen now the trends and the spaces that I'm talking about. Do you think that is now what people are looking at for, you know, that whilst I have a very small, we know that houses are becoming, or people are moving into smaller, you know, land spaces, so they've got town houses, and they've got these very small spaces now for gardening, but do they still look at that as a, you know, the sacredness of that space? That's my space, I've done it, I've been gardening in there, and this is my satisfaction.
That seems to be the trend. And as I say, they want things that are green all the time. Unfortunately, people aren't planting deciduous shrubs anymore, which is a bit sad to me, because those that are living on the high veld, they don't then get the pleasure of the spring blossoms. Obviously, those that live in tropical areas like Nelspruit and Durban, there you don't really get things like blossoms. But there's nothing more beautiful in spring than seeing all the new shoots and the new blossoms. But as I say, that's unfortunately something that people don't plant anymore. They want it to be green all the time and look nice all the time, because they've got so much less time to spend in the garden.
Also, what is important is when just about the deciduous, I like is when you see the difference, you know, in the plant, from being this beautiful plant that has all these leaves and then it goes through this different state. And when it comes to beauty, to winter, it's got its stark beauty. It is so different. And I think we sometimes miss all of that.
No, we certainly do, and as I say, I definitely think the people living in the warmer parts of the country miss that completely. And whilst a lot of people complain about the winter, they don't understand, as you say, it has that stark beauty as well.
Well, Michelle, we're going to leave it at that. It's time for the news. When we come back, we'll continue with some of our other conversations. You take care. Thanks.
Fine.
Bye. Dare to be different, yes. Assalamu alaikum. My name is Ismail Bariyaba, and just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming medium wave 1448 in Satellite Islam. And we have a wonderful, I beg your pardon, we've got Michelle Kudza, who's just a wonderful, Mohammed is laughing, yes, and to be with us on air this morning. She's she has so much knowledge and so much to share, and very enthusiastic, and it's just an absolute pleasure to have with us. Remember, you could join us anytime, the number to dial 854-1548. Good morning, Michelle. I'm so sorry about Mohammed's laughing on the other side. Well, it's just an absolute pleasure to have you with us, and you know, we're learning so much and so much fun. Michelle, before we go on, I think we've got a call online. Let's take that one on. There's a couple of other questions that we've got that's come through. Assalamu alaikum. Hello.
Hello.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Please go ahead.
I've got a question here concerning bougainvillea plant.
Okay.
I had one which was quite old, around about 15 years or more.
Mm-hmm.
And it was growing very, very profusely and very much so. We tried to cut it down.
Mm-hmm.
So we chopped it down quite a bit. And we just left a few stumps behind. Now it's getting new shoots again.
Mm-hmm.
These shoots don't look like the old ones, because they're coming out sort of purplish in color, almost the color of beetroot. And the leaves that are coming out are not green. They're also sort of purplish, and they're much larger than what they used to be. What I want to know is, will this plant flower?
Okay, so you're getting some color already, and you want to know whether they will, you know, produce bracts. You're wanting those, you know, them to be flowering. Is that the question?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Which part?
These leaves don't look like the previous leaves.
Okay. Which area are you calling in from?
Durban.
Okay, not a problem. Michelle, did you get the question, Michelle?
Yes, I heard that. As far as I know, they will shoot and they will flower again. I think you just need to be a bit patient, because often with plants, when they reshoot, and even some plants when they're young, the leaves don't look the same as when the plant is mature. So they will definitely flower. I think you just need to be a bit patient.
I see. So these leaves that are a bit larger than before, you mean they are immature leaves?
That's right, yes.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yes.
How long do you think it will take before they start flowering?
I beg your pardon?
How long do you think it will take before they start flowering?
I would say at least 2 or 3 months. I don't think you'll get flowers so quickly after cutting them back.
Okay, okay.
So, Zakala, thanks for your call. Much appreciated.
Okay. Thank you.
Michelle, and I was also going to ask something about a bougainvillea, and there's something come through about the bracts and saying that, why is it that certain colors do well in certain areas and not in other areas?
I have no idea. I've never noticed that.
You'll find that the deeper or the more intense colors, for example, the purples and the deep pinks do well in certain areas, and you find that perhaps in the warmer areas you find the oranges and, you know, those sort of towards the lighter colors. Do you think it have to do something with the warmth, or is this just an observation?
I don't know. I've never actually noticed that. All I can think is that some colors are just stronger, because you get that in lots of plants, that you'll find a particular color is just a more dominant species than another one. So perhaps that's the reason. As I said, I've never taken note of that.
Well, and you know, if you go and you find these bracts, especially if you're traveling towards the north of Johannesburg and you find on the highways, it's always the deep purple ones that are, you know, this beautiful show. And when it comes to the other colors, they're not really very dominant. And then within, you know, the area that we live in Asia, we very seldom find the oranges really dominant. It is always that. I'm not sure if it's preference for people's colors, or is it that just having to do with the climate?
I think it's got to do with the climate, that the one is maybe more susceptible to cold than the others, that the purples are tougher, and hence the reason why one sees more purple in the cooler areas.
Another question came through, and what's the difference between a succulent and a... So sorry, man, the question's come through. It hasn't come.
Cacti, perhaps?
Yes, I think that's it. Well, it gives the name agave. I'm not too sure that's what it's all about.
Yes. Basically, quickly, the difference between a succulent and a cacti is cacti are the ones with thorns and succulents are the ones without thorns. Therefore, all cacti are considered succulents, but succulents are not all cacti.
Okay, so let's get that. All succulents... are cacti, not
no,
all,
no, no.
Not all
cacti are the way around. All cacti are succulents.
Yes, okay.
But all succulents are not cacti, because cacti are only the ones with the thorns.
Okay, so we've got that one settled. About food, let's go back to something about food and herbs, and we've got a couple of questions around that one. Again, Bulbinella, tell us something about it and how to plant and get best out of Bulbinella or Bulbine.
Bulbinella or bulbine, I mentioned it previously on the radio, is wonderful for mosquito bites and for bee stings. It's an indigenous ground cover, either with yellow flowers or orange flowers, about 150 to 200 millimeters high. It is a succulent and it spreads like a ground cover, so you can just break off sections of it that have got some roots and transplant it, and then you'll sort of multiply it that way. And it's very tough and water-wise as well. They also do well in containers.
Another question coming through, there's a lot of bees in my garden and I've got lots of children playing, what should I do, and what precautions, and would they sting?
Basically, when the kids must just stay away right next to the flowers. Generally, bees don't go out and seek people, it's only when you disturb them. And unfortunately, without bees, we won't have food, so one can't not have flowers and things that attract the bees, because we need them for pollination of the food. But as I said, just don't let the kids go right next to the flowers, and make sure that you've got either antihistamine handy or something like Bulbinella, so that you can quickly grab a leaf and put the gel on should the need arise.
There's still the same question about it. I've got some water in my garden as well, and I always see the bees coming in and out. Would the water be something that they'd be coming to take?
Yes, they come in to drink the water, because they also need to drink, and the felt is so dry, so they will use bird baths to come and drink water at.
Thank you very much. Let's take the next call online. Assalamu alaikum. Please go ahead.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Go ahead, Bin.
I've got two questions. One question is this the right time to plant figs? The fig tree.
Okay, you want to know about planting the fig tree.
And the second one I wanted to know, what must I put to get juicy lemons?
Okay, not a problem. Thank you.
Okay, firstly, for the figs you can plant any time of the year. It's only in frosty areas where you need to be very careful to plant them too close to the winter. So in frosty areas, I would say stop planting them from about February. But if you live in a warmer area, you can plant them right throughout the year. And the best spot for them is on the northern side of the house, where they get quite a bit of sun. And then you said for juicy lemons... lemons enjoy Epsom salts, a teaspoon of that once a month, and you can feed them with a fertilizer that's got a high potassium content, for example, something like a 315, because the 5 is the potassium which encourages the fruit.
Thank you very much. The next question is coming through. I've got Grenadella's got some fruit in them. Do you think they benefit from any feeding?
Grenadella is also, again, 315. 315 is suitable for anything that bears fruit or a flower. So geraniums, hydrangeas, citrus, chilies, peppers, tomatoes, and Grenadellas would benefit from 315 because of the potassium content.
Next question, I bought a tamarillo. Tell us something more about a tamarillo.
Tamarillo is a little bit frost tender, so you need to make sure that you're protected from frost if you're in a frosty area, and they require a fair amount of sun and regular feeding.
Okay, and what is it? I'm not too sure.
It's one of the crosses. I'm not sure exactly which one. I think it's a tomato with a grenadilla, if I'm not mistaken. And okay. I've never eaten, had the pleasure of eating one, so I'm not quite sure what the flavor is like.
Okay, so tamarillo is, it's frost tender and needs a lot of sun. And, and feeding the same like you feed anything else, 315, 313. 315,
yes.
Okay, let's go on to some of the questions with regards to herbs. I'm now trying to get some parsley going. I bought some. What's the best way to make sure that I have parsley? So I bought both the curly leaf as well as the flat leaf parsley.
And parsley, I found, doesn't need a lot of water. I find a lot of people tend to overwater the parsley. And also when you plant it, you mustn't plant it too deep. A lot of people make that mistake and plant the parsley too deep.
Okay, so plant it, does not have to be planted too deep, does not have... lots of water. In terms of its position in the garden, sun, shade, lots
it
of...
It can take sun or light shade, and it also do very well in pots.
Okay, so they do well in pots as well.
Yes.
Okay. There's been a move now to people planting more of these herbs herbs and food in containers. Is that a good idea?
Most certainly, especially for those that have limited space or that can't walk too far or don't want to bend too far or can't bend anymore. Whereas if you have your veggies in your herbs in pots, they get lifted off the floor automatically, which just makes it so much easier to reach them, to clean them, to feed them, to harvest them, etc. And as long as your flower box or your pot that you use is at least 25 centimeters deep, because otherwise there's not enough space for the roots. But most of the herbs and the veggies do very well in containers.
Next question coming through, is this the right time to get, I beg your pardon, plant lettuce and rocket?
Rocket with this heat is not a good idea because I find it goes to seed very quickly unless you're continuously removing the flowers on your rocket. Rocket seems to do a little bit better when it's not as hot as what it is at the moment. Lettuce is fine, particularly if you're planting the perpetual lettuce. That's the type that you just pick a leaf or two in, as opposed to the lettuce heads.
Okay, so lettuce is good. Rocket not perhaps at this particular time with the intense of heat that we have.
That's right, yes.
In terms of herbs and veggies, chilies, is that the right time still to plant chilies from seedling? Is that the right time?
From seed, it's a bit late, but seedlings you can certainly put in now because the chilies will be right up until sort of May when the frost arrives.
Okay, so chilies is fine. And with other herbs, is any other particular herb that we can
do? Basil loves the heat, so basil grows in very quickly at this time of the year. But one must just be wary and not allow it to flower either, remove the flowers. And you people that plant herbs need to realize that you need to pick them and use them all the time because they grow so quickly.
I think that's a good watch point because I think people sometimes think, well, the herb is there and, just leave it. And if you're not going to sort of pick it, you're not going to get the advantage or get the maximum use of the herbs. Next question, how often do you water a pecan nut tree?
Pecan nuts, probably once a week should be sufficient, but in this heat, obviously, one will need more regular watering. One thing I'd just like to mention is, especially with trees, I mentioned it earlier before the news, it's better to water less often but properly so that you encourage deeper roots.
Better to water thoroughly and deeply once a week than to offer, just a superficial watering, is that
That's
right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Another question coming through, any suggestion for the herbs that I can plant at this time? I've got one or two of the culinary herbs, any other ones?
Apart from culinary?
Well, it doesn't say which ones, so I'm
okay.
Not sure.
If they're wanting non-culinary, cotton lavender is very nice, the rose-scented geraniums, the lemon-scented geraniums, melissa, lemon verbena if you're wanting it for tea. So it absolutely depends on what the purpose of the herbs are, whether they're to make herbal teas or are they there for potpourri. So I think you need to determine what you want to use them for, and that will determine which varieties you'll need to plant.
Okay, and just with regards to the melissa ground cover, would that be good as a ground cover?
Melissa, yes, that is lemon verbena, sorry, not lemon verbena, lemon balm, I beg your pardon. That they do use in teas as well, yes, it does make a very nice ground cover.
Okay, let's go on to the other questions. I've got some of the other fruits coming in. It's almost time for my peach tree to bear, but I'm not too sure what is any precautions to be taken this particular time.
What one must do is, if the branches are very full, you can thin out some of the peaches so that you'd rather have fewer bigger fruits than a lot of small fruits. So that's what one can do. And one should be spraying with something against fruit fly. There are various products in the market. Some are a bait that you actually mix and apply with a paintbrush all over the tree, or alternatively you can spray for fruit fly. And those of you that don't want to spray and want to do more of an organic type gardening can consider planting tansy, which is also a herb, around the base of your fruit trees, and that suppresses the fruit fly as well.
What particular herb was that?
Tansy.
Tansy, T-A-N-S-Y.
That's correct, yes.
Okay, is that the only use for tansy? Could you use it perhaps for other uses as well?
They use it as an insect repellent. They often make sprays from it as an insect repellent.
So it is an insect repellent as well as, companion planting for fruit trees.
Correct.
Okay, then the next question coming through is that with regards to the different types of trees that we have and the different fruits that we can get, I'm on the Gauteng, the colder side of Johannesburg. Any particular fruit tree that I could plant?
Any of your stone fruits, in other words, plums, apricots, cherries, peaches, nectarines, they all do well. And as far as nuts goes, it's basically the almonds and the walnuts and the pecans that do well in that area. So, and citrus you can plant, but you need to protect them in winter.
Next question coming through. I've got a lime tree. It's been giving lots of blossoms, but I haven't had any fruits on it. What do you think? There's still lots of, it's still very small, taking a long, long period to come to, to bear fruit. Is there any problem?
Often fruit trees take a few years before they really start bearing. What one must just make sure, particularly when we have a very dry spell, is to make sure that they get sufficient water, because otherwise the flowers will fall off and you won't get fruit.
Okay, so would that rule apply to this lemon and lime tree as well?
Correct, yes.
Okay, thank you very much for that one. We're coming almost to the end of the program, just waiting to see if there's any other particular questions. Someone's coming with the cementi herbs. I saw cementi herb, I've got cementi seeds. Tell us something about that.
I beg your pardon, what was that?
The cementi seeds. Someone just says cementi.
Oh, cementi, okay, sorry. That's the brand name. I think they're Italian seeds. They do a lot of the heirloom seed varieties.
Okay, tell us something about the heirloom again.
Heirloom is the old varieties of seeds that your granny used to have, and there's definitely a huge movement to planting sort of older seed varieties. For example, the tomatoes, they're bringing back all the old tomatoes, the big yellow ones and the orange ones and the striped ones and the black ones that you used to get many, many, many years ago.
Okay, so would that be something in opposition to Monsanto's sort of way of doing things? Would that be sort of that type of a movement?
Yes, no, most definitely. As I say, it's the older varieties that they're bringing back, the open-pollinated varieties.
And would that be, now I'm just asking the question, the cementi, would it be a good time to plant it, or is it a bit too late for us to get into the cementi?
It depends on the variety. They do a whole range of veggies and herb seeds. So, again, it depends on area. If you're in a frosty area, it's becoming late for some of the things like tomatoes and chilies and brinjals, whereas if you're in a warmer area, you can certainly still consider planting those seeds.
Well, thank you very much, Michelle. Thanks for being with us this morning. It's just been enjoyable. We've seen and we've shared so much information for us. And again, you're out on the Roshni Road, just outside Roshni, about 6 kilometers. And you'll be there this morning and afternoon as well.
Yes, I'm here every day.
Okay, you're there every day. You're lucky, to be working with nature and love what you're doing. And Mama says, well, not all of us have that opportunity of loving what we're doing. And I think this is just fantastic. And what is your favorite flower and herb that you're looking at this morning?
Sure. I really enjoy basil, because I love making pesto from it. And I enjoy a lot of Italian dishes. So I use a lot of basil. So basil would definitely be my favorite herb.
Yes, and I saw lots of basil, I must say to you about basil, and you get them in different types, you get them in, I didn't know, but you even have different flavors of basil. I saw clove basil. I was surprised when I saw that. I said, wow, I thought it was just basil as basil that I knew, and I then saw there was different, and you have them both, perennials, and you have them in different varieties.
That's correct, yes. I like the normal plain sweet basil, the one that they use for the salads and with the mozzarella cheese.
Okay, so that's the green one. And tell us about the flowering plant.
That's a difficult one. I'm not really a flower person. I prefer greenery. I love trees, perhaps because my grandfather planted so many trees. So I sort of developed a love for trees. That's really a difficult one to answer, because as much as I can appreciate all the flowers, I certainly don't have a favorite one.
You know, I was walking with someone back from Mosque yesterday, and we passed by a house, and that tree was cut, and he said to me, "It's such a shame that people have to cut trees." And I said, "Well, you know, sometimes it is circumstances that make people cut trees. You know, you sometimes plant a tree and you don't realize that the height and, you know, how much the root spread there is and so forth. And maybe 20, 15 years later, you need to cut that down." And he said, "Well, it's a shame." So I said, "Yeah, those are the realities of those things. While we don't want people to cut down trees, sometimes it has to happen."
Yes, I think it's often due to ignorance that, as you say, initially it was planted incorrectly, not enough space allowed for it.
Well, thank you very much. You take care and have a wonderful, wonderful week. And I'm sure we're going to get some rain, I hope, on your side. We get them. It's so important that it falls in the catchment area, not anywhere else. And we need the dams to fill up. But you take care, Michelle. Everything of
thank
the best.
Thank you so much, Israel. Thank you.
Thanks, bye-bye. Bye-bye. And that's Michelle Kudze coming from, talking to us from her nursery just outside Roshni, 6 kilometers down, and she's got a beautiful selection of stuff, and she's been talking to us a number of things that we can talk to. So if you are in that area and you have an opportunity, please do pop in and chat to Michelle. And that's all for me until we meet again. But before signing off, I must say that I went yesterday to the herbal happening, and I was blown away. It's absolutely fabulous to be out there. That whole garden, couple of hundreds of plants in there, and all of them are either medicinal or culinary. Beautiful. So if you have an opportunity and you're wanting to do something, to take a drive out, it's in the take of the Olifants Road off-ramp. It's about 6 kilometers down. So after you, if you're coming from Johannesburg, it's the, the Olifants Road off-ramp. Not very far from the Turkish mosque. It's about 5 or 6 kilometers down. There you go in. And I must say to really, really, really fantastic. There's so much that was happening there. And just to take a walk into that garden and to see what it is. And all the plants that were there were all, you know, either, like I said, medicinal or culinary. And more than 130, I think, must be the largest selection in Gauteng. And there also had lots of plants that you could buy that was on sale. And I think it was just a wonderful way of spending a morning or an afternoon. And it is the last day today, so if you have an opportunity wanting to see something different, wanting to see some of the herbs that you can buy, some that you can use, you would be able to find some of that there. It's all for me until we meet again, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.